16 Minutes of Care is a podcast based on the CARE principles, a strategic framework that reveals how brands create impact by caring and, as a result, grow their business. In each episode, Isabel welcomes a company executive who explains how CARE has helped their business grow successfully and sustainably.
Also in the financial world, the importance of care for people and the planet is on the rise. More than ever, investors need to understand the impact of their investments. So I'm very eager to meet Emil Fuglsang. He is one of the co-founders of Matter, a Danish technology company that makes sustainable investments simple, flexible, and transparent. Welcome, Emil.
Thank you so much, Isabel.
Very, very happy to have you here. Launched Matter 6 years ago. Before you worked as a consultant, why did you make this change and create the startup?
I think it was motivated by a desire to try to do things a little differently and take more risk. I really enjoyed the jobs I had. I found it to be very intellectually challenging and stimulating. At the same time, I probably also had a sense that I wanted to get a little closer to things I found to be more meaningful or urgent to work on. And I had for several years had a sort of a hobby slash academic interest in the world of finance. So when my co-founder approached me and said, I have this idea, I want to start a sustainable pension company, I thought this must be the sign. So it was a fairly unreflected and pretty impulsive decision based on a foundational need to try to do things differently.
Okay, interesting. So the financial world is still very untransparent. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of greenwashing. What exactly do you do with Matter, and what is the problem you want to solve?
Yeah, I'll try to explain it as simply as I can. So just as you put it in the beginning, we are a technology company and we work only with other companies, business to business. Serving financial institutions like banks, large asset managers, asset owners like pension funds, for example, and we help them with data and analytics solutions software that help them understand the sustainability of their investments.
Yeah. And with sustainability, you mean both social responsibilities of companies and environmental?
Absolutely. So sustainability is a lot of things. I'm sure we'll probably talk more about that today, but in essence, we cover, you can look at it as a 360 degree of the sustainability of a company. We don't look a lot at what the world means for a company. We look a lot at what companies are doing for the world, how they're impacting it.
And where do you get that information? And how come big banks and big pension funds don't get that information?
Yes, that's an interesting question. I think if we start with the latter, why are they not getting this information? They are, but they rely on companies like us to find it for them. And the reason is this world is not very systematized yet, you could say. So if you want to know something about how much carbon is emitted by the operations of a company, that information is reported only by a few companies and it's reported to one place. Then if you want to know if the company is sufficiently managing the risk of being involved in deforestation, that's another type of information that someone else has. So it's really a game of collecting information from a lot of different sources about a lot of different companies, structuring it, all of that, and moving it onto the people who need to make decisions on it. And if every bank had to do that, or every pension company had to do that, that wouldn't be efficient. And that's why companies like us exist.
Mm. You started 6 years ago, 2017, yeah. If I'm correct. Do you feel like the sustainability agenda is on the rise as well? Do you feel that your product matters more today and more big corporations are open to it?
Yes, definitely. I think when we started, so as I mentioned before, when we founded Matter, it was actually like a pension startup, but we quickly pivoted into being focused on what I just explained we do today, data and analytics. And once we started having conversations a handful of years ago with pension funds, banks, asset managers about the need for sustainable investments, a lot of the conversation we had back then was on is this important? Or why is this important? Why should I care about whether or not I invest in coal mines? Why should I look at the emissions from the portfolio companies that I invest in, etc.? It feels very much like the conversation has moved away from why is this important or is it important, and into how do I work with it and what do I do about it. So I think everyone has acknowledged, at least in Europe, and to a growing extent in North America and very quickly in Southeast Asia as well, this is something we need to look at. It's happening in different ways and at different speeds, but it's no longer a question of whether or not it's relevant for investors to look at. It's more a matter of how do you then do it? What do you look at? How do you implement it into your investment decisions, etc.?
Thank God, it's finally happening. There's, like you said, like we said, in Europe, there's the legislation that is coming, the Green Deal, European Green Deal. Then we have the Sustainable Development Goals from the United Nations. And then you have the ESGs. So there's a lot of things happening and a lot of regulations. Can you explain in very simple, if it's possible, in very simple way, what are all the differences and why does it matter?
Yeah. Well, now I say yes, as if I can explain it simply. I'll try, at least. It's probably easiest to understand all of these different acronyms if you look at it chronologically. So when this is the financial industry started looking at sustainability 2 decades ago, there was no way to really codify it or understand it. The only thing you knew about sustainability was ethical decisions of things you don't want to invest in. Churches, church foundations that did not want to invest in things from an ethical reason. So that was the only practice of what you could say norms-based investing. As it progressed over the last 2 decades, the notion of ESG came up. And that is investors that have themselves together, data providers in the financial industry together, has come up with a concept for investing in a sustainable, socially responsible way. And I'm doing like this because a lot of these words are a little complicated to use. Some people would say that ESG investing is not sustainable. It's a more basic thing. But anyway, ESG refers to environment, social, and governance related factors that you can integrate when you invest. And that was, when that happened a couple of decades ago first, a very new thought, because historically you've only been looking at financial metrics when you invest, and now you start to care about other things. ESG therefore also evolved into a little bit of a weird thing. So ESG investing today is looking a lot at how all these sustainability themes, environmental, social, and governance themes, affect a company rather than how a company affects them. Case in point, you care more about measuring how the emissions of a company affects its stock price than you care about looking at how much the company actually emits. That is ESG. It's an industry standard with a lot of different privatized models for measuring it. And it's a little bit more focused on risk around the company rather than actual impact.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs. That is a multilateral framework with all the countries in the world that have come together and said, what is the blueprint for sustainable development? Where should the world be on social themes, climate themes, peace, institutions, economic growth, 15 years from now? And those goals were set 8 years ago, so we're halfway.
And those goals, a lot of companies use now in their communication to say we work on number 2 or number 7 or number 9. That's one of the things that companies use now, right?
Exactly. So you'll see a lot of communication around, we specifically focus on this sustainable development goals. We're a medtech company, so we work with SDG 3, for example, good health and well-being. Now, that's maybe a good way to move into the regulation thing of what's going on, because what you have seen with the ESG agenda before that, CSR, corporate social responsibility, and now with all this communication around the UN Sustainable Development Goals, there's been a lack of standards for, first off, there's been a lack of knowledge of whether what is being done has been good enough. So is it enough when companies say that we support some SDGs? Is it enough when a private company creates some data around another company and says they are performing 60 out of 100 on ESG? does that mean that we'll get to where we need to be as a society? And particularly in the EU, there's been a lot of concern for that. There's been concern about protecting consumers so that companies can't SDG wash, as you could say, their products and services. But there's also been a more deeply rooted concern for how do we steer capital? So how do we ensure that investors who invest in these companies are actually betting on the right industries so that we get the transition we need to support the Paris Agreement, to limit emissions, global temperature rise, but also support several social themes. And that has led to a wealth of regulation in the EU that tries to codify sustainability. So now there's an EU taxonomy that sets new standards for sustainability. There are specific disclosure regulation under that that you have to disclose against. So everything has gone from being, again, zoom back the 20 years ago, something people in the industry would define themselves, to a very complex, heavy, and incredibly detailed and constantly evolving regulatory scheme.
In Europe, mainly.
In Europe. And then it's happening a little differently other places. In North America, it's more focused on requirements. So you're not telling investors what to do, you're just telling them what to say and that they have to disclose what they do, but then it's up to them to define how to invest sustainably.
Yeah.
So it's getting pretty messy.
Exactly. It's pretty messy and pretty complex. Let's get back to care for the planet, because that's what I understand. I mean, otherwise you're going to completely lose me. You researched and discovered that the highest emitting industries, such as the gas and oil industry, have the least ambitious net zero commitments.
Yeah.
That's, on one hand, it's maybe not surprising. On the other hand, you would say, damn.
It's a problem, you could say, right? I agree. It's maybe not that surprising, but it is a problem. So a net zero commitment is a company that commits to reducing its emissions to an extent where at the end of, when they've reduced them enough, they are net zero, meaning they capture as much CO2 as they emit.
Yeah.
And obviously we need the entire economy to go in that direction. I think the metaphor is it's a bathtub and water is running in, that's CO2 emissions, and it's being filled up. So we need to not just, you know, reduce the CO2 emissions, we need to turn off that faucet and stop the water pouring in. That's why we need to get to net zero. So it's great when you see companies that set net zero targets and have them approved and start following that trajectory. But it doesn't matter that much if the only companies that do it are technology companies with very little emissions, or if it's, you know, service companies with limited emissions. It matters way more if it's oil and gas companies, transportation, industry, those industries
companies
that historically...
with huge carbon footprints.
Exactly. So yeah. Our research found that if you look at where those commitments are being made, those industries with the highest emissions are least likely to set goals. Now that makes sense, of course, because it's a bigger commitment for them, but it's also very problematic because it means we're telling ourselves a story that more and more companies are committing. And God bless them, it's great. It's good that these companies are committing, but it's not the ones that hold the key to making the radical change we need.
Do you see radical change with the big ones?
Depends on the industry, I think. I think investors have been too good at telling themselves a story that all companies can change, or most companies can change. I think the world is yet to see empirical evidence for an oil company that says, you know what, I spent a lot of money buying the concessions to take all this oil and gas out of the ground, but I'm just going to leave it there. I'm going to tell the shareholders that they're never going to get their money back. And that's because that's back to the metaphor of the faucet and the bathtub. That's a way to turn down the water, right? They're not doing that. Investors don't succeed. Investors don't even want them to do that because it means they will lose money. So I think the types of change we see in a lot of the industries where change needs to happen is very incremental and not radical. So yes, they're investing a little bit more now in renewable energy, but they're still mainly investing in fossil fuel.
Of course.
So in the oil and gas industry specifically, no, there's no radical change. But I think there are other industries with good examples of more radical change.
Like what industries, for instance?
Specific companies in the utilities industry. So now we're in Copenhagen here in Denmark, and the local utility company here in Denmark is Ørsted, that used to, so we're in a country where we have no mountains, so we have no rivers. We don't have, like, you know, gases with thermal energy coming up. So where can we find renewable energy? We don't have dams, for example.
Wind energy.
Wind. And I think there's a beautiful transition story in someone like Ørsted, who was historically just a coal-based power plant operator. And they have transitioned into becoming a specialist at developing and operating.
It's a great case.
Renewable energy.
I bring that case very often also, yeah, because they are so transparent about their whole transition that took them a decade.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
Yeah, it's great. It's a beautiful example.
And I think it does it justice to call it radical, because it happened fairly quickly and it's a big ship to turn around.
10 years. It took them 10 years to totally. Just let's get back to the banking world.
Yeah.
The banking industry is very untransparent, like I said before. Can you give us a tip as individuals? And I know you don't work for end consumers, but if we want to invest a little bit of money, how can we make more sustainable investments? What do we need to look at?
Yes. Luckily today, that's easier than it was just a few years ago. The short answer is I would look to EU classification of funds. That is a pretty good, it's not a perfect, but it's a pretty good indicator of sustainability. And that particularly what you need to look for is SFDR Article 9 funds.
Oh my God, I'm going to write that.
Write it down
subtitles.
And go down to your bank and say, let me look at the different investment products you have. And let me know if any of them are Article 8 or Article 9. If there is an Article 9 fund or several Article 9 funds, chances are, it's not a perfect, as I said, that's not a perfect system, unfortunately, but chances are that they will be way more sustainable than any other alternatives. So that's a really good place to start, and you doesn't have to get more complicated than that.
Okay, that's already a great
You can then ask for more advice on, do you want to, you know, favor gender equality or climate? Maybe your bank can help you with that. Maybe they don't. They can't. But the Article 9 thing is a good indicator.
Okay. Last question for the first episode, Emil. You also run a company. You're a startup. What do you do to take better care of the planet within your company?
A number of different things. Simple stuff. So first off, I think our main focus is on the product and not in our operations. So everything we do is about building data and analytics solutions that can help investors see further and change things. Whereas if we were a company that produced furniture, a lot of our impact would be in trying to reduce emissions from how we did it, the operation rather than the product, right? For us, the impact case is very much on the product. That doesn't mean we should be blind to the responsibility of behaving ethically as well. So for example, we've only serve meat twice a week for lunch, and it's only at half of a normal portion.
Okay.
So that's an example. It's small things like that. We have a policy of not flying if we can get there by train within a number of hours. So go to Stockholm by train instead of flights and stuff like that. It's not a lot. Then, you know, we source that's less about climate, but we source the things we can source ethically, the help with office assistance and cleaning, coffee, things like that. We try to find providers that either work with groups of people that need a job or work with smallholder farmers who are part of a sustainable coffee supply chain. So it's very drip by drip, and it's looking at every single little case we can. But to be completely transparent, we're also a small company, so it's limited how much energy we can put into the different things, other than sort of some broad strokes, you could say.
Mm. But honesty and transparency is already one big step towards a more caring and a more sustainable world, right?
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a very important place to start.
Thank you so much for all of this information, Emil. I'm very keen to talk further with you on the second episode. But for now, thank you for watching, thank you for listening, and take care.
Want to create lasting impact with your brand while feeding sustainable growth? Check out thecareprinciples.com and see how we can help you. 16 Minutes of Care is an independent production from Isabel Verstraeten, brand strategist, founder of the Care Principles, and author of the book, Does Your Brand Care? Help us reach more companies who are looking for caring and sustainable growth by giving this podcast all the stars it deserves and by sharing it in your network. Thank you and take care.